Hello and welcome to Critical Talk. This is the podcast for the criticalgamer.co.uk website. This is our inaugural podcast, otherwise known in the industry as the first one we've ever done. And we are very excited to bring this to you and look forward to having a range of discussion, debate and general banter. Joining me, Stephen Gurevitz, otherwise known as a Grumpy Gurevitz, are two of my fellow writers, PC specialist Michael Johnson. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. And everything except Nintendo specialist, Anthony. Anthony Hare, how are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks, sir.
Welcome.
Don't like what you
said, you can call me sir if you want. I mean, as long as we don't do anything later involving spanking, you can call me sir. So welcome to the podcast, guys. Let's see if we can hang it together and get from beginning to end without completely breaking down. What I will say is, before we get started, if any of our listeners have any ideas for future topics or just have questions, or maybe they want to ask our opinions on things, just use the good old contact form on the website and that will be passed through to us for us to peruse and go through for the next coming episode.
You could probably also use our Twitter account. If you kind of write on the wall of our Twitter account a question or two, we can have a look at them as well.
Facebook as well.
And Facebook. Yes, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and we're also on MySpace, and we're also on Playfire. So let's kick off by just asking everyone what they're playing. Michael, take us through what you're playing at the moment.
Well, the first game I'm playing and what is taking up a lot of my time is something I'm not allowed to talk about because it's unfortunately under quite a strict NDA, but I can tell you it involves both guns and milkshakes. But I've been playing a lot of the Dragon Age Origins expansion, Awakenings. I've just finished that, and it's a good 20 hours of dungeon crawling and killing stuff.
I haven't played that. I've seen screenshots of it, but I haven't actually played that. Is that just the big 3D Baldur's Gate, or is it more open world?
It's kind of their natural successor to Baldur's Gate. I think that's how they originally kind of pitched it to the fans. They started talking about, we're going to make a spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate, and we're going to bring it bang up to date with our cinematic values and, you know, the kind of Mass Effect storytelling. Mm. So it's kind of a cross between those two.
Are you playing anything else as well? Any small indie games or any handheld stuff? Any app type stuff? What else are you fiddling around with?
Well, last weekend I got completely and horribly addicted to this most bizarre game. It's an ASCII game, which means it's kind of, the graphics are completely made up of like keyboard symbols and question marks and all that. And it's called Liberal Crime Squad. And the aim of the game is you create a squad of kind of anti-government liberals in America. You have to train them up to undermine the government and eventually overthrow it. It's quite interesting because you start out, you're kind of just a player, but a college dropout or whatever. And you kind of, the only people you can really recruit to your cause are hippies. So you have to like train these hippies and you're kind of selling dodgy brownies and that's how you make your income. But it's really involved and really quite deep, but it's the ugliest game you'll ever see.
You sell biscuits to overthrow the government in the end.
That's exactly, yeah, that's how we will eventually overthrow governments, with the sale of biscuits, I think.
Now, if that's going to happen anywhere, it would be in this country. We're the biscuit country. But so is that, do you actually control characters in that, like, as in like using the cursor keys, or is it more or less a text adventure?
It's basically you have to assign the different guys to different squads, and then you can send them out on little missions. Like you can go and raid scientific places where they experiment on animals, and you can destroy the equipment there. Or you can kind of go to an upper-class club where all the kind of the Republican enemies are, and you can kidnap like high-level CEOs from there and then torture them to try and turn them to your liberal values. It's kind of a bit weird.
Them to make them turn liberal?
Yeah, it's a very sarcastic in tone kind of game. It's very like done with tongue firmly in cheek. But yeah, you torture the democratic right into turning liberal. And it's got a little mini game for the torturing. It's really involved and quite sick as well.
So, but I still think, is it you're actually like using cursor keys or whatever to actually control individual actions, or is it giving out commands?
It's a set number of commands, but there's quite a lot of them you can do.
Cool. Who's it by?
It's by Bay 12 Games, the creators of Dwarf Fortress.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And anything else? Anything handheld?
No, I haven't really been trying any handheld games over the last couple of weeks.
Okay, fair enough. Anthony, what are you gaming with?
Well, I'm currently playing Heroes of New Earth for the review that should be up very soon, or now, depending where the time is published. But it's basically a real-time strategy type game that's all online, and nobody likes me in it, because apparently if you weren't born with natural skills at kiting and everything, you're just a newbie. But even if you're on the newbie servers, you're a special new low kind of newbie, and they don't like you because you mess up their stats.
Is this a PC game?
Yes, it is.
And what's it called again?
Heroes of New Earth.
And is it a sort of MMO RTS?
Kind of, but nothing kind of stacks between matches. You sort of level up and stuff within each session, but then it's all set to zero, and you always level up again in the next session. Stats attract, and it's a team-based game. So when you start letting down your teammates, which you do when you're quite new, people get quite mad, and it's one of the most hostile communities I've ever been in when playing games.
It's actually based off a mod for Warcraft 3, if you've ever played that online.
Defense of the Ancients, yeah.
That's
the Warcraft 3 mod. So there are loads and loads of veterans around, so if you stumble in, new as anything, prepare to cry yourself to sleep, because it can be quite horrific, some of the things they yell out when you don't do too well. It's all good fun.
I don't want to prejudge the review, but probably by the time this go out, the review will be long up and have been read. Is that something that for you you'd mark a game down on? Because actually, that's an interesting discussion point. And actually, I'm not going to go into the article I'm about to publish, but it kind of links into that. I've never thought about this before, but yeah, it might be a superb game with superb online functionality, you know, no lag, blah, 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 blah. But actually, if the culture and around the game stinks, it surely that, as you've already made clear, affects your enjoyment.
Well, I think it's a multiplayer-only game. And so if the community is that hostile, I'm fighting the ethical battle in my head. You know, can I base a judgment on the game on that? Because how can I recommend someone to play a game if they're not going to get a warm welcome and everyone's going to tell them to uninstall it as soon as they start playing? So it's an
interesting discussion, because it's not the developer's fault per se, even though you could argue maybe the developer needs to have even more ways of segregating those who've been playing for a certain period of time. Maybe it is the developer's fault. Maybe their matchmaking is poor. Maybe really they should have, they should not be partnering up people who've played over a certain critical mass of games with anyone who's new.
I think it's a labour of love. It's based off of a mod, which was quite popular within its own sect.
Yeah.
And so, you have loads of people who loved it. They've come onto the new game. And then if you get, caught in a wash of people who are just sort of getting into it for the first time, you're going to get quite frustrated when they don't know how to play. And they don't know all the terminology. I've been asking about all the terminology, and, people don't like when you do that either. Sort of halfway through, it goes, what does this mean? It's like, everyone starts crying and telling you to uninstall the game and leave.
Oh, that doesn't sound great. What else have you been playing, if anything? Anything handheld? Anything console-based? Anything where people don't tell you a joke and bugger off?
Well, I'm a bit late to the party on this one, but I've just been getting into Band Hero and Guitar Hero and bashing the plastic midget drums and stuff, and it's quite fun.
Fair enough. Yes, you are a bit late to that party, but I think Activision are quite pleased there's people like you still coming into it.
Well, it's fun. And
I play quite a bit of the Guitar Hero games, and I've got a few friends, and we all kind of get together around the house, have a few beers, have a few snacks, and play away. But no one in my group of friends can play the drums. We're all just hopeless at them. Anyone we try and get through a song, if ever it fails, it's the drummer guy. He's just going, sorry, guys.
Well, no, it's interesting, because I've got a friend, I'm a musician, I've got other friends who are musicians, and some of them poo-poo the Guitar Hero format games, and I don't, because clearly it's not the same as playing a guitar, but there is musicality involved in these things, and certainly those people who do play instruments have an advantage by far when playing these kind of games. I think they're a great learning tool, or at least to introduce people to the basic concepts of timing and all the other things that go along with playing music. No, I think they're great. And I've got a DJ here at home, and the game's terrific. I think it's really well put together and really fun and really alive. I do wonder if they're going to drive the format into the ground, though, with all these releases.
Yeah, they must be on about their fifth iteration of Guitar Hero. Now, Rock Band's getting there as well. They're a bit slower and a bit more careful. I mean, the Beatles Rock Band, you couldn't really argue with that. It was a quality package, but if they start doing one for every single band under the sun, then it'll quickly drive itself into the ground.
Well, they've got Green Day coming out. They've got Green Day coming out, which they actually think will sell more than the Beatles, because the Beatles didn't sell awfully well for something as big as the Beatles, but that's because the demographic didn't line up. The Beatles, even though, don't get me wrong, the historic, that will never be taken away from them, and I love their material. But for young people, people between the ages of 10 and, shall we say, 25 years old today, it means nothing to them.
No, you're quite right.
Sequels being run into the ground. I mean, I heard that Guitar Hero 7, considering Guitar Hero 6 hasn't even been announced, well, it's kind of been announced but not really showcased at all. Guitar Hero 7 slipped on someone's CV, so whether it was a typo or whether they really are working Guitar Hero 7 already, despite not being anywhere near the release of Guitar Hero 6, it kind of says something about where they intend to take the series and run it into the ground and bleed it dry.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think this will roll into a conversation we're going to have in a few minutes, which generally revolves around the way that Activision are currently doing business. But, we'll have to wait and see with that. I mean, I see no reason why they can't do releases once every 2 years. I mean, well, really, they should do what I think they're trying to do with Rock Band, is Guitar Hero and Rock Band should just become platforms in the same way that iTunes is. And they'll do, the money should be off the track. They should do incremental upgrades to the actual software to give new functionality. But maybe a clever business model would be to make the actual core software almost free once you've got the hardware. So if you want to do new versions of the software, that's fine, but people don't really feel they're paying for it. But obviously they then pay for the content. And if they turn it into a sort of interactive download store, that probably would be a more sustainable way of doing things. But obviously that's not their traditional business model. It's not how they traditionally do things. So that would be quite a leap of faith.
They've already got kind of the interactive stores, but I think they're loath to completely get rid of the box copy because they get a significant amount of revenue from those. But I will say one thing about the series. I don't want them to kind of end until there's been either a Rock Band or a Guitar Hero Queen, because there needs to be a Queen version.
Well, Queen signed up to SingStar.
They've ruined it then. Because, I mean, come on, the Brian May guitar solos there with his ridiculous pedals and his beautiful hair. They need to be replicated in the living room.
Yeah, well, you'll just have to buy SingStar and then at the same time pretend to play a guitar. Meanwhile, what have I been playing? I've been involved in the Halo Reach beta.
How are you finding that?
I did it intensively for the first week, and then the second week I've hardly touched it, to be honest. I see they've extended it for a day. So I'm going to try and get a bit of extra time in before they shut it. I do like it. It's very Halo. It's not like a revolution, which again is to be expected. I mean, Halo's a very solid platform. They're not suddenly going to pull the rug from everyone's feet. The new features, such as having different classes, one with jetpack, one which can kind of be invisible, all that kind of stuff. It certainly makes the game more interesting. The maps are as interesting as Halo maps have ever been. The only thing is, it does just feel like another Halo game. So the graphics are definitely more organic, if that's a better way of putting it, a bit more richly detailed. But I don't know, it'll be interesting. I would imagine that we'll all be swept away with the marketing and the hype, and Halo Reach will be a huge success. But there's a percentage chance that it will just be a good success because people will start to tire with the format.
Do you think it can beat out Modern Warfare 2 on the Xbox charts for game most played?
I don't think so. No. I don't think so. Maybe in the first few weeks when it launches. But I think, especially as we live in a day and age, it rather sounds very political, but with real wars going on, I think the whole idea of fighting in a real world situation with real guns and everything is more compelling for people's imaginations in this moment in time.
I don't think sci-fi is completely dead.
No, I'm a big sci-fi fan, but I think at the end of the day, it's really a lot of, this sounds perverse, but it's a lot more satisfying firing a machine gun rifle than it is a laser gun.
I think, yeah, one of the main things about Call of Duty that people don't recognise enough is it's kind of gun porn. There's so many guns in the last, in Modern Warfare 2, there's just, you know, there's like five different assault rifles, five submachine guns, three sniper rifles, so many guns, and people kind of fetishise the guns, and they have a favourite gun, and they take it away from the game, and it's still their favourite gun, and there'll be another game that comes out, and they'll say, oh, well, why isn't my favourite gun in? It's kind of, it's getting to be more about kind of the real world, the guns, all of that.
Yeah, and Halo can't do that. The one thing I do like about Halo, it has the best melee attack, and it always has, where you really feel like the butt of the rifle connects with the opponent, and the sound design for that is brilliant. And actually, where I like killing people the most is with the melee. But that's terrific. But yeah, I mean, the space stuff is great, but it's a bit too smooth and nice, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not as gritty and kind of real.
Yeah.
Something. I mean, people say a lot about games, it's for escapism, but if there's recognisable elements they can also attach themselves to, then it improves the experience for them, I think.
Well, that's why they went down that route with Killzone on the PlayStation 3. It's sci-fi, but it's sci-fi which is recognisable as to how combat is today.
It's kind of science, non-fiction.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's kind of like any Tom Clancy game. They're all kind of set in about 3-4 years in the future, so they can have a few technical gizmos, but it's very recognisably still the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been playing the beta. I've been playing Splinter Cell Conviction, which I've completed, enjoyed a great deal. It's my first Splinter Cell game. I've never really liked the rest, but this one is very different. It's a bit Batman Arkham Asylum-esque, but the co-op levels are amazing. They're a game in their own right. So that's very, very cool. I'm trying to think what else I've been playing. I'm the kind of guy who plays a bit of this and a bit of that and not a lot of everything. I've been playing on my DS, Scribblenauts. I've got that permanently stuck in the game. I just like mucking around with that all the time. Earthworm Jim I downloaded from DSiWare. I never played the original, so I'm really enjoying that. And on the PSP Go, I play everything from FIFA to the Siphon Filter games, which are actually really, really cool on the PSP. So, oh, and the other thing I've been really getting into on the Xbox is Toy Soldiers, a downloadable game from Xbox Live, which is a tower defense game, but you can jump into planes and take over individual gun posts, and then it suddenly becomes like an FPS quasi kind of experience. I think it's really cool.
It sounds interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it's available for PC, but it's if you've got an Xbox, I definitely recommend downloading that. And the last thing I've been doing, but not much, I haven't been spending as much time on this, Battlefield Bad Company, along with obviously going to Modern Warfare 2 once in a blue moon. And it's fascinating jumping between those two games because they play so, so differently.
Yeah, I play both of them as well. And after the main difference for me is when you're playing Battlefield Bad Company, everything blows up. You see a kind of a sniper or whatever, someone who's a bit entrenched. You just get a grenade out and blow everything around him away and then pick him off. Whereas in Modern Warfare 2, it supports the camping culture a bit more, as in you can get into this spot and you can just pick people off and there's nothing they can do as long as you kind of are aware of your surroundings.
Yeah, it's what I quite like about Bad Company too, because the battlefield feels a lot more dynamic because you can root out snipers with mortars and rockets and you don't ever feel safe and everything explodes. And also going back to the sort of gun porn aspect of it, I think Bad Company 2 actually has some of the best sounding weapons I've ever heard in a game.
Yeah, it's very good. They've clearly recorded the sound of the gun and then they've processed or re-recorded it, whether it's artificial or not, the sound of a gun in a big, empty, hard building, so then you get that different sound. And what's very good is the moment you move outside, the gun is much more like how you'd expect the gun to sound, close to your ear, and then the moment you go back inside a building, you then get different acoustics on it. And so it makes a huge difference to the way that the gun is experienced.
The other main difference for me between the way the two games play is in Call of Duty, I can just kind of hop into a game and then get away with the killing, whereas in Bad Company, I can't stand playing unless I'm with a squad of people who communicate. I just don't find that it works at all as a game you hop in and play by yourself.
Yeah, well, even if they're not communicating, because maybe, I mean, I play on a PS3 and not everyone has a headset, at the very least, play as a squad. So when you spawn, spawn off your squad members. So that way you are, as it were, moving together as a unit. If you go as individuals, yeah, the whole game just breaks down.
I also find you can get a sort of plague of snipers in Bad Company 2, where you just have, you know, two or three members of your squad choose to be recon. And so you can spawn off there. Makes them a good spawn point behind enemy lines, but they don't actually become that useful.
Yeah, and it's a great game. The draw distance is wonderful on it. As you said, you can blow up the buildings. And obviously, compared to Call of Duty, it's a much bigger playing area. It's a very different experience. In some ways, I think it's the superior game. But you can't deny the almost arcade thrill of Call of Duty.
No, I completely agree. It's just fast-paced and it's all about the kills. And then every 5 seconds, something's popping on your screen. You've unlocked this, new emblems, new titles, new add-ons for your weapons, new guns, new everything.
I don't like that constant pat on the back. It gets irritating. You know, you just get, you know, 5 minutes of playing, you're just running around, and so you get a massive guitar anthem coming up saying, "Yay, you've ran 500 metres. Well done. Have a cookie."
Well, some of us like to be congratulated for trivial tasks, you know, it makes us feel better about ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a nice link into our first proper main subject, is Call of Duty. Obviously, we've all, and I say all, I'm making an assumption on behalf of the entire listening audience out there, but a lot of people who regularly read websites, including our own, would have read the shenanigans that have been going on between Activision and the maker of Modern Warfare, being Infinity Ward, with the leaders of that development studio being fired for so-called insubordination, then count, and then them joining EA. Or creating their own studio that has been backed by EA, and then counter-suing Activision. Around 25 staff or more have now left Infinity Ward. A bunch of staff, some of them who are even still there, are now suing Activision for lack of royalties. And at the same time, all of that's been going on, which we're really not here to talk about, Activision has been rolling out Call of Duty, Black Ops. Call of Duty, there's a third-person Call of Duty being developed. There's Call of Duty is being developed all at the same time. There's Call of Duty supermarket shopping. You know, you name it, there's Call of Duty. And my question is, in some ways, has Activision become the new EA? Have they become sequel and franchise dominated to the extent that they now are going to sort of suck the life out of the platform?
Well, I think it's very fair to say that Activision have run Infinity Ward into the ground with the amount of sort of staff leavers and stuff they've got. I mean, that studio's in a bit of turmoil at the moment, but I was a bit sceptical about Black Ops, but looking from the trailers and stuff, I mean, they recently won a couple of days ago, it actually looks quite promising, and Treyarch, they were a bit shaky when they did Call of Duty 3, but their last game, World at War, I actually really enjoyed. I think I preferred World at War to Modern Warfare 2, because it felt like something new, whereas Modern Warfare 2 was a bit sort of more of the same and, you know, overdone. It felt like a Jerry Bruckheimer film where everything exploded twice as big as it did the first time round, but had about six times less impact.
I think the story was absolutely ridiculous in Modern Warfare 2. I also agree, from what I've seen of Black Ops, that looks brilliant. And I don't think Black Ops in itself is going to somehow another, as it were, be a problem. The problem is there's all these other games they're talking about. There's a third person game. How many Call of Duty branded games can you have before people get tired?
I think it's just going to take one game that falls well below expectations, and they'll ruin the reputation of the games as being, you know, the best series out there. this game, the new action adventure, as they're calling it, game, is developed by Sledgehammer Games, and I don't think they've done anything previously. It's like their first game, and it's a very big name to take on for your first game. And it'll just take one game, and people will start to look to Respawn Entertainment, which is the guys who left Infinity Ward's new studio, and whether Infinity Ward themselves will recuperate enough to bring out a new game is doubtful, and whether it'll be anything near as good as the Modern Warfare games is even more doubtful, I'd say.
There's also sort of competition coming up with the new Medal of Honor game that EA are working on.
Well, it does make you wonder what Respawn are going to be making, because the guys who...
It has to be a shooter.
Well, it has to be a shooter, but you wonder... it can't be a military shooter, because EA have just invested all this money in a new Medal of Honor. Plus, they've got Battlefield Bad Company, which is published through EA. So it's like, all right then, so what are Respawn going to make? I mean, put it this way, we could have a situation that even if Activision themselves don't overplay and saturate the Call of Duty marketplace, between EA and Activision, they might just saturate the modern warfare scenario game in general, and you'll have a situation where you divide the camps.
I think that's probably already started. I mean, people were kind of, they still bought Modern Warfare 2 by the bucket load, and I think Battlefield Bad Company 2 sold very well. But I can't think of many people who are thinking, oh, I can't wait until Medal of Honor comes. Not that it looks like a bad game, like quite the to the contrary. It looks like a very well-made game. It looks like it could be entertaining, but not many people are looking forward to it because they've already played in the last year two or three Modern Warfare simulation games or arcade games.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, and I think we might see... or the other scenario is all the games will do well and all of them will sell a few million each, with Call of Duty, at least for now, taking the lion's share and selling, you know, between 5 and 10 million, shall we say, and the other games selling between 2 and 5 million. But when it comes to the online communities... You have a massive, yes, you won't have that same level of commitment that traditionally Call of Duty has been able to claim, which actually links back to that question. You maybe Halo will go to the charts, not because Halo is performing better than it did previously, but just because you have, a split between all the Modern Warfare shooters. So, a bit like the first past the post voting in this country, Halo will be first past the post without having to increase its voting number of votes at all, simply because all the people who prefer to play a Modern Warfare shooter will have their loyalty split.
Yep.
Which then also creates the problem of an implosion, which is what I personally am a bit worried about, is if all of these top studios are all concentrating on the same genre of game, and ultimately, they all start selling less because the new games on the block start taking cuts from the older games. You could have a situation where they're not covering their costs because they are very expensive games to develop for. And then you have a crash.
I think they'll always do well. I think there's always going to be a market. And I think the amount, even if Modern Warfare 2 divided its shares of players between four games, I think they'd still have a comfortable size player base, but they won't be anywhere near as profitable as they have been in the past, and people will, and that might not necessarily be a bad thing, because the companies will have to rethink their strategy and they think, well, maybe churning out six warfare simulators a year isn't such a good idea. We'll have to innovate and create something new, and I don't think that'd be a bad thing at all.
Absolutely, and let's remember, there's also, I don't know who's publishing it, but there's Spec Ops that will be coming out as well this year. Another Modern Warfare stuck in the sand game.
I think there's a few. There's Blacklight Tango as well, I think it's called.
That's more sort of set in a bleak dystopian future rather than a Modern Warfare.
Okay, right. I've got that one confused with something else then.
Well, hopefully. I think it was announced today that Ghost Recon Future Warfighter, whatever it's going to be eventually called, has now been put back to 2011, quarter one. Ubisoft has obviously decided that there's going to be far too much congestion and they want nothing to do with it.
It sounds like a sensible move, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how that pans out. But, I mean, Activision in general, I feel, are becoming the new EA. EA went through a period of only doing sequels, and let's be honest, they still do. But they have, over the last 2 to 3 years, invested in new IP, such as Mirror's Edge and other new games that in some cases were risky, like Dead Space and all that kind of stuff. Activision, though, have become a sequels-only company. We were discussing Guitar Hero just a few minutes ago. Obviously, we just discussed about the fact they're trying to create as many Call of Duty games as possible. I'm trying to think of any new and original IPs they've brought to us which have been heavily invested in.
I must admit, I'd like to see another Prototype, because I thought that was a great game. But I don't know if that'll happen.
Yeah, Prototype was hugely enjoyable just for the thrill of jumping over buildings and then smashing into the floor with a giant mutated fist and destroying everything. But yeah, they need to kind of broaden their horizons a bit. The one thing people do kind of forget about Activision is they are now Activision Blizzard, and it's quite interesting because Activision have this kind of hatred going on towards them and their CEO Bobby Kotick. On the internet especially, people think he's the devil and that Activision are an evil company, whereas Blizzard is probably the most popular gaming developer in the world, possibly bar Valve only. They're just, everyone who likes their games adores them. They've got this rabid fan base as well. And it's kind of interesting because they're actually the same company now. It's Activision Blizzard.
Yes, but they've got quite separate management.
That is true.
They've managed to keep Blizzard as Blizzard. And in some ways that takes the pressure off Activision to deliver because they know that they've got this bank, essentially, that they've drawn up to. I mean, don't get me wrong, Activision, I think, are going to produce some great new games over next year. There's the new Spider-Man game that hopefully might actually take off where the Batman Arkham Asylum format left off, and that could be really cool. There's always a possibility of a new Bond game, but that might be on hold at the moment. They publish most of the LucasArts games, so there's some interesting stuff coming out there. But, you know, when you go to their website, I see that there's a new True Crime being developed, which is a GTA clone, and that could be interesting because it's going to be set in, I think, Shanghai and stuff like that. But everything else is just your Tony Hawks and your Call of Duties. Where the new ideas are coming from in that company.
Well, there's one thing, EA kind of, they did have this reputation for putting out sequels, but I think they did a great job with Mirror's Edge and Dead Space.
Yeah, and I think Activision need to learn from that before they end up having the financial losses that EA ended up having to absorb before they change their course.
I think EA's new approach of quality over quantity is definitely a good move. I know it sounds a bit silly, but I mean, there was a time when sort of producing constant shovelware and sequels like for The Sims, I think with Laptop, was the way to generate ridiculous bucket loads of money.
Yeah, let's be honest, they still do it. I mean, you still have FIFA 2011 and everything else, but even games like FIFA, they've said, no, let's do this properly. Let's not just do the same thing, but with new team names. So anyway, let us move on to our next subject, which is, are we looking forward to a Natal or Sony move? If you look at the websites like ours and others, there's a lot of, obviously, coverage of it. And on a technical level, we're all very excited. But let's imagine you own an Xbox or a PS3. You're quite happy with it. You currently have a traditional controller. Are you going to want to go and spend £100 on an additional controller that will only work with some games?
For me, it entirely depends on one thing, which is the third-party support and the games that come out. Whether the technology is amazing or not so amazing, whether it's kind of a disappointment, it entirely depends on whether the games are worth playing. I mean, you look at the Wii as an example, because they are basically copying the Wii, trying to get into that market with the motion control. And the Wii sold extremely well, but it's on the wane already, and it's not a particularly old console. It's got a number of very mediocre games and like abject failures, like Wii Music, which just completely flopped.
I think that's a bit harsh. The Wii, I mean, I'm a Wii owner, and I'll always stick up for the Wii. The Wii is still outselling the other consoles in the United States and in Europe. It's only in Japan, where essentially everyone already owns one, that the numbers have started to drop. But when I say drop, they're still very, very respectable. They're neck and neck with the PS3. So the actual hardware sales are not stratospheric like they were before, because a lot of people already own one, but they're still up. It's still the best-selling console. I think they said that they sold more than all the other consoles in the first 4 months of this year put together.
That's as may be, but a lot of people I know have Wiis, and they kind of just gather a bit of dust in the corner, and they, when they want to play a game or have a proper gaming experience with a long adventure like Uncharted 2 or a Halo or Heavy Rain, the Wiis kind of looks a bit gimmicky next to it, because there's no games like that can engage you for that same period of time.
No, I agree with that, which is why I'm a multiple console owner. I'd say Red Steel 2 has shown that you can do these kind of games. Cause I don't need to justify that game. When I load it up, it feels like a proper gaming experience. And the Wii Motion Plus thing definitely works. It's not, you're not waggling. You're doing direct control. So the machine shows it can do it. And obviously you've got all the Nintendo first party games, which are very meaty indeed. Even Wii Music, though, we digress slightly, but even Wii Music, don't get me wrong, I never got that game. It's not really my kind of thing. But that did ship copies. I think it ended up going over 1 million. So there's an audience out there for this stuff.
I think my main issue is if the games come out and each one of them relies on a gimmick to do with the controls, then it's not going to work, and they have to kind of think beyond the traditional, here's a game, let's control it slightly different with some kind of gimmicky motion. They need to really like revolutionize it to make it work as it should be and as it has the potential to be.
But let me turn it on its head. Even if they do what you just described, ultimately they're going to still make every single game work well with a current pad. Why? Because you need to recoup your money, and you know that everyone out there has a traditional gamer pad because they come with the machine. So once you know the game works fine with a traditional pad and you don't have to have your arms walk in the air, you know, doing this, that and the other, once you know that, is that surely not going to disincentivize you to spend another £100 on extra controllers?
Well, for me, it would completely. I wouldn't bother. I wouldn't bother at that point buying this fancy box. But I think Anthony had something to say.
Go on, Anthony.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, if they're going to make everything so that it'll work with either controller anyway, I can't believe it's going to produce that many great results, because either you create a game that's solely optimized for waving your arms around looking a bit crazy and wacky, or you do it for the controller. I mean, I think the best way Natal, anyway, could be sort of implemented is if you have sort of dual support, so the games that are controlled both with the controller and maybe with Natal. I mean, I don't know how you, maybe sort of like for a shooter, you can sort of duck and weave while, you know, playing through it on the controller, where you have more input options. Because, I don't know, I thought the Wii, I have a Wii that's currently shackled with dust, and it's, I just got bored of the gimmick. I mean, playing Legend of Zelda, it's like, yeah, I've got a sword, but really you're just waggling the controller around. It's just registering it as something that might as well be a button press.
Well, that's why you need to get Red Steel 2 with the Motion Plus, because it's a very different experience, including like even the basic table tennis games. You feel like you're playing table tennis. You're not doing what you do in Wii Tennis, which is timing a random swing. And in some ways, it's not until the technology comes on that level that you suddenly go, oh, I get it now. But the thing is, with Natal, maybe that one will stand alone more, simply because it is completely 100% body gesture-based.
I have to say that for me, the Natal is much more of an exciting prospect than the Move. I'll probably get hounded by Sony fanboys for saying so, but it's something slightly different. It's not just another controller. It's an entire new way of controlling the game, which appeals to me more than kind of a stick.
I thought the concept videos for Natal were very impressive, but they were concept videos. I don't know if they can actually deliver on their promise of sort of, you know, miming that you have a racing car wheel and stuff like that. And then you have games like Milo, which just look like interactive grooming.
Well, I think the things that excite me with Natal are things like the example of steering, the idea that I could be playing an FPS with a traditional controller, but having an extra degree of head movement. So I can still control the head with the normal pad. But if I also just want to naturally look left and right slightly with my head, I get an extra nuance of control independent of the actual pointer. I think that's kind of Cool, I think that's interesting. So it allows me to look around, but I'm still aiming directly in the middle, if that makes sense. I think that's interesting. But all the other, what I call party games, I'm not interested in that at all, and I don't think any hardcore gamer is going to be interested in that, not if they already own a Wii, at least, and let's be honest, everyone does. So, because most of the games I've seen since have just been people jumping around trying to hit balls.
Well, this is probably it, that Sony and Microsoft noticed the sort of insane casual market the Wii brought with it, and they decided, you know, they want a piece of that pie. And the stuff will sell. It's been proven with the Wii. I mean, even if people have the Wii, they're eventually going to sort of, you know, get in the same mind that they want to upgrade graphically or to the next sort of game. And so, you know, Move or Natal are possibly going to be that direction. And so they're going to cash in on those who want something more than a Wii.
But maybe, but an Xbox by itself, even if they do another price cut, what, you're going to be looking at £130? They're saying that Natal is going to cost at least £100. Whereas the new Wii pack, is you get your Wii, it comes with Wii Motion Plus, it comes with the regional Wii Sports, Wii Sports Resort, and it's all there for £200 ready to go. I just feel that I think they're throwing a lot of money into it. I think they're coming into it so late now because they've both delayed their technology. In some ways, I think the Sony Move might do better than Natal financially, because at least that's more likely to relate to the average hardcore gamer. Because if going back to what Michael said, if they actually do build the technology into games like they're showing off with the new SOCOM, then ultimately you could have a better shooting experience with it. With Natal, however clever it is, from what I understand, you can't actually point at the screen. It will only pick up movement. It won't pick up directional stuff.
I think, personally, from my perspective, one of the things that it seems like the Sony and Microsoft are both trying to do is market the new technology, not just as a kind of an add-on, but like an upgrade to the console. It's kind of, this is the PS3, and this is the PS3.5. This is the Move. And the same with Natal. They're kind of trying to delay the next-gen consoles and use these things to kind of push it to the next level. Whether that's what the hardcore gamers want, I don't know. I don't think so, but I think that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and maybe with a new-looking Xbox, which is almost probable, that they'll do a big PR relaunch and they'll try and relaunch themselves as the new Wii HD. I think, ultimately, in some ways, Nintendo can sit pretty. Why? Because, as I said, their model is already selling. It hasn't really stopped selling. It's just selling less than it was, but it's still outselling or Xbox, for example, and there's nothing stopping them next year releasing a Wii HD, which in effect is as powerful as an Xbox, and is fully 100% backwards compatible, so all the people who have invested in Wii games know that they'll still load in. And if your mum and dad, who have never bought a console before, and the first console you ever bought was the Wii, you're not going to suddenly jump to a PS3 or an Xbox. You will wait till there's a new Wii that plays your existing games.
Indeed. I have younger siblings, and they both adore their Wiis still. Most of my friends who game there, you know, they'll stick to their PS3, their Xbox, but I think the Wii's completely captured a younger generation, and it's not going to be easy to move them away from that.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love Uncharted 2. But if I load up Mario Kart, if I load up No More Heroes, there is something about the tactile control of a Wii which is really quite compelling. I often will play it for less time. I'll definitely admit that. But the time I play, I often come back with a much bigger smile. Whereas I sometimes find the games on the Xbox and PS3 almost like work.
It's. I think it's something they kind of built into games recently with their achievements and their progress bars. It's all like these numbers, and you're pushing towards a completion rather than just getting in there and having fun.
Exactly. And I think the Nintendo platform still has something close to unadulterated fun. So let's just do a vote. Won't take long. There's only three of us. Who's more interested in Natal?
I'd say I'm probably more interested in the Natal than the Move.
Anthony?
I'd probably lean more towards Natal, but I'm not wetting my pants of excitement over either of them, to be honest.
I haven't wet my pants yet. Maybe a bit closer to release and there'll be a bit of seepage.
Well, even though I'm the one who created the vote, I'll tell you that I'm more interested in Natal on a purely academic level, but I would be more interested in using the Sony Move, because I do like the Wii tech, and in some ways I do believe this will be like the Wii HD, and because I own both platforms, I'm quite happy to do that. I'm not so fussed about jumping around the room, which is what all I've seen the tower being used for so far. But we will wait and see. Moving on to our last subject, Little Big Planet 2. What does it mean for gaming? Gentlemen, discuss.
I think it means that, well, originally they said to us in an interview that there wouldn't be a Little Big Planet 2. What they wanted to see from the game was, you know, user-created stuff, just pushing the game forward, updates to the game and the framework for it, you know, just a kind of evolving game. And it's showing that they've been bought out by Sony, and it's kind of more traditionally conforming to the model you'd expect where a game's really successful, so you bring out a sequel. I think it's a bit sad in a way.
But they're going really far with this one. I mean, no, it's no longer just about creating levels to run around in. I mean, you're creating entire, you know, genres of games. I mean, the dev studio, Media Molecule, have already sort of made a Command & Conquer clone just to prove how powerful like, their new engine is. And I'm really quite excited. I mean, I never owned Little Big Planet, but I was really, really intrigued by what the community sort of produced. And so I think that the Big Planet 2 is going to be a really powerful tool in the hands of, like, you know, the big wild world, the online community that follows it and sort of tweaks everything, and just the imagination of everyone.
That's one thing that's interesting to me as a primarily PC gamer, is it basically looks like an attempt to move modding away, not away from PC, but it looks like they're trying to get kind of a modding community onto the consoles, which is somewhat something they've always lacked. You know, PC games come out and a big community forms up around them, and they create mods for years after release, and it looks like they're trying to bring that onto the PlayStation as well. I think that could be really, really good for the console in the long run.
I mean, it brings me back to the Amiga days when you used to have, was it the shoot 'em up construction sets or something like that? There used to be quite a few games which were make your own games, if that makes sense. The one thing I'd like, and this is might seem really peculiar, but I'd like them to make this a downloadable game, simply because I own Little Big Planet and I thought it was a lot of fun, but I didn't play it as much as I should have, simply because for me it was a dive in, dive out game.
You didn't want to go to the effort of kind of putting the CD in every time. You just wanted to dive in a little bit
of
time. Yeah,
and because this is more or less a piece of software that allows you to, so you might dive in for 10 minutes to work on that game before you do something else, or you might dive in 10 minutes just to play test or do this or do that. Yeah, I see it almost as an integral piece of software they should build in to the PlayStation 3. By all means, they can charge me for it, but I just want it on the hard drive so I can dive in, I can download new levels, I can spend time mucking around with this, mucking around with that. So I almost see it as something which is more useful to me than PlayStation Home.
No, yeah, I think PlayStation Home is a different thing. It's kind of social networking with a graphical interface, whereas this is much more about creation and gaming and kind of people who are technically minded getting involved in a game to a degree that's not seen in most console games.
But if they had this on every hard drive pre-installed for every PlayStation they sell, or if they just made it a downloadable game, like I said, I think they would create a massive social gaming community because it comes with a game development tool. Now, I know that at Microsoft also have their, Kodu thing, which I've also downloaded, and actually that's very, very powerful as well, and I shouldn't be underestimated. But essentially, I think if Sony really wanted to be clever with this, they wouldn't just see it as you described it earlier, as another game release. A sequel, another box game. They would essentially say, hey, this is our opportunity to build our version of XNA or something similar. Because if it's on the hard drive, people are more likely to play it.
No, they'll probably stick with a kind of a standard retail disc thing, but they do need to consider the idea that people aren't going to want to, you know, make a conscious effort to, all right, I'm going to go sit down with Little Big Planet 2 for several hours. It's more of a, oh, well, I've got 10 minutes spare. I might have a go at creating a new level or playing around with the tools to see if I can't do something new or play with the gravity or anything like that.
That's right. It's a tinker. I call it a tinker. It's a tinker game. And obviously some people will sit there for 5 hours and work away at something. Other people will just tinker, and then over time things will evolve. And I think the disc, even though this sounds ridiculous because it doesn't take a lot of energy to walk over to the machine, but putting the disc in the disc drive is a barrier. And I, you know, this wasn't one of our subjects, but actually, that's, you know, I'm all for downloadable games as much as possible, or games that I can 100% install without having to use the disc. Because I am now getting used to the fact of not having to put discs in, and I'm finding discs barriers to the enjoyment.
Well, I'm not sure that's a laziness issue. We'll say that it's kind of the way we're evolving as gamers. I think that's a safer way to put it than saying it's lazy to go up and get the disc. But I'm terrible with discs. I lose them. I get cracked boxes. I prefer my games to come a digital download, or at least if I do have a disc, platforms like Steam, you just have to register the game with them and you can download it from there in the future. And I find it a much more convenient way, and I don't have to worry about scratch CDs, which should be a thing of the past with what's going on in the digital market.
I must admit, when it comes to game console stuff, I love having an impressive library. You know, it's just all green Xbox boxes, just lined perfectly in alphabetical order. I know the discs and the instruction manuals inside them, because I'm quite sad like that. But when it comes to sort of PC stuff, I think Steam is brilliant, because it's just sort of, you have games tagged to your account, so, you know, you can do anything you want with the discs after you've sort of put them, tagged them to your account, because then you can just re-download them on any machine you want, and yeah, it just seems it's always there. If you upgrade to a new machine, buy a new computer, you know, you don't have to fumble around looking for discs again. You just log into Steam, go through what you own, and sort of download it again.
Yeah, so, well, I think I own a PSP Go, and I'm the one person who got one. I'm just looking at my PSP Go now. Hold on a minute. I got 20 games on it. Right, and they're not all the what are called minis. They're the little ones. They're only like four of them are minis. They're a few of them are PS1 games, and then the rest of them are proper PSP, you know, like AAA titles, which give you hours of enjoyment. And I think it's great. Wherever I am, I open up this little thing with terrific graphics and amazing screen, and I've got my game library there, and it's always with me wherever I go. And I on my PS3, obviously, I have a certain number of downloaded games. And I love the fact I can just switch the machine on and go, what shall I play now? Just like choosing a TV channel. I've had my PS3 replaced because it broke down. But getting hold of my old content was really easy. I just went to account dev management and downloaded everything I downloaded before that was tied to my username. So it is the future. And I do think there are some games that lend themselves more to being 100% downloadable than other games. I think any game that in effect is a creative tool, I don't know why, this is purely emotional as it were, but it, for me, it feels right as something that's on the hard drive, which is why I mentioned it for Little Big Planet. And there are other games like Uncharted 2, more than happy to put it in the drive. It's almost as if, like you're saying, what Blu-ray am I going to watch tonight? You know what I mean? But I do think anything that's a creative tool or a sort of an ongoing social online experience feels much more better if it's an integral part of the machine.
No, I think you're definitely right there. It's especially with these Tinker devices. You might only play it for 10 minutes, and you're right with the Blu-ray analogy. If you're putting a game in, you're going, right, I'm going to have this specific experience. I'm going to sit down. And you clear a window of time away to play. Whereas with a Tinker game, you can just play it for as long as you're enjoying yourself, and you shouldn't necessarily kind of be bound to the experience by the physical act. It might just be me being extremely lazy and saying that, but I'd rather a kind of a fluid experience where I can just sit and tool around with something for 5 minutes, then maybe switch to another app or another game, have a go at that instead, rather than tying myself down and saying, right, this is what I'm going to play. 3 hours, that's the time to play.
I think that's right. And one thing I'll add to that before we close off is one of the great features even of the PSP Go is that if you dive into one of your games, even if there is no save point, you can pause it at any point. Unfortunately, you can only do it one game at a time, but you can pause it at any point, shut the machine down or listen to music or do something totally different and then continue where you left off. If they can do it on a PSP Go, I see no reason why they can't do it on an Xbox or a PS3, where you can dive into any... maybe they want to limit it only to the downloadable games, fine. But you can dive into a game and literally pause it where you are. Because I'm fed up with save points. I want my gaming to be more like my PVR TV experience with my Sky Plus or TiVo for our American listeners. I want gaming to be more like that, where I can pause it at any point, come back, play another 5 minutes, pause it again, play another 2 hours, pause it again. So I'm hoping people are listening to us and we'll get that in next year's Xbox update and the forthcoming rumoured PSN upgrade. That'll be interesting too. Out of interest, can you do that on Steam?
On Steam, no. Games, there's some interesting features like the Steam Cloud where it saves your settings across games, but there's a little overlay you can bring down, but the game doesn't kind of just pause where you want. It depends on the specific game, and a lot of them stick to a standard saving kind of save game function thing.
Well, the overlay is quite handy, you know, for if you want to invite friends to a game sort of mid-game, or if you want to sort of, I don't know, just chat to people on the side. And I guess you can do those things on consoles, I know, but I find because it's on the PC, it's a lot more convenient because you have a keyboard in front of you, sort of as just part of the default kit you have. So,
yeah, for sure. Steam is like Xbox Live, but obviously if you want to type, it's a heck of a lot easier. I get all of that. Anyway, I think we've raised some interesting topics tonight. We've come up with some actual good ideas. And what most important is we've managed to get through our first inaugural podcast.
Whee!
Excellent. Hooray. We hope to do these pretty regularly. And as I said, if you have any comments, as we mentioned, you can Twitter, you can Facebook, or you can just go to the most important website in the world, criticalgamer.co.uk, and use the contact form to email us your questions, your ideas. But I'd like to thank you, Michael, for joining us.
You're welcome. I hope to be back next time.
I hope so too. Anthony, thank you.
Thank you too. I'd also love to be back.
And this is me, Stephen Gurevitz, the host of The Critical Talk, saying goodbye and talk to you soon.